Do you have a good revenge story? You know, one of those moments when someone just did you wrong? I mean, intentionally. It's not just a mistaken, like, hey, I didn't mean to. I mean, the person set out to insult you, to defame you, to power down on you, to use you. I mean, it's one of those moments where there's no question that that person was coming after you. And you waited and you plotted and you talked about, you might even brought other people in because you wanted to have your perfect retaliation. Do you have one of those stories? Let me ask you this. When you got your revenge, when you retaliated, how did you feel in the moment? How did you feel a week later? How did you feel a month later? How did you feel a year later? And as you think about that story of revenge and retaliation, how do you feel now? You see, we all have those stories. I mean, I actually thought about sharing one of my stories, but you would all think so much less of me, but it's a good story. But as I think about it, well, my perspective on that story has greatly changed over the course of time. You see, there's something within all of us that wants to get our revenge. Swiss researchers set out to try to understand that, well, the chemical and the body's response when it comes to revenge. And what they discovered is that in the moment when a person is enacting their revenge, when they're getting their retaliation, there's actually a reward center in your brain that, well, it makes that we love to get our revenge. In the moment, in the moment, it fires off all of these neurons and there's a sense of yes within us. But what they also discovered is that that moment quickly fades. And when we enact our revenge by getting retaliation, all of a sudden, well, a cycle starts to emerge. And we understand the cycle, the revenge retaliation cycle. One of the most famous American families is the picture of the revenge retaliation cycle. It's the Hatfield and the McCoys. Last summer, my family, I spent our entire summer vacation riding side-by-sides on the Hatfield-McCoy trails. I didn't know a lot about the storyline of those two families until we decided to go, and I started to read a whole bunch about them. And then I found myself, during the course of our summer vacation, riding these trails. I was blown away by the labyrinth of trails that these two families created through dense, dense forest, just to get their revenge, just to retaliate. And you see, these Swiss researchers, as they were studying, they quickly realized that that reward center in our brain quickly fades and regret sets in. And that when regret sets in, it actually elongates, it stretches out the original offense. That when we act on our revenge by retaliating, well, it doesn't solve anything. And even as I share those words, you all know that intuitively. You know that even if your incredible story of retaliation was a thing of beauty, you know that it didn't solve a thing, did it? It actually stretched out the offense. It stretched out the hurt. It didn't solve anything. Francis Bacon said it this way. He said, a man that studieth revenge keeps his own wounds green, which otherwise would heal. And that's why the cycle of revenge retaliation leads to regret, wounds, deep wounds that never heal. You see, part one of this series, we focus in on these words from Jesus. Jesus had just gathered his 12 disciples, his 12 leaders, and one of them, Matthew, who was the outcast out of all the 12. I mean, Matthew had just literally left his tax collecting table where he was working for Rome and stealing money from his fellow Jews. And so he was despised and hated. And Matthew, years later, is telling the story. So Jesus had gathered these 12. They had left their family, their jobs, their life to follow this guy named Jesus that, well, they were leaning into. They just had no clue what was to come over the next 3 years. And Jesus immediately gathers this massive crowd because people had already heard about Jesus, and they had already heard about he was healing people and how prolific of a teacher he was. And so they had all gathered on this hillside that gradually sloped into the Sea of Galilee, or like the Romans called it, Lake Tiberias. And Jesus had set in to teach for the day. And in part one, we looked at this section where Jesus said that you, an emphatic you, are a light to the world, to everyone. And he went on to say, let your light shine before others, before every single person, so that they will see, and this is the important part, that they will see your good deeds and glorify God the Father. You see, our good deeds is all about love. That's why loving people by serving people is really our pursuit. As a church, a gathering of people, to tell all people about Jesus. We want to love people by serving people to Jesus. And in doing so, we glorify, we honor, we worship God the Father. You see, when we take a moment and we just think about our good deeds, those good deeds, well, they're connected to people. And here's what we know about people. You're a people, I'm a people. And we're messy, and we're broken, and we have good days and we have not so good days. And we do things nice for people and to people. And there's times where we all intentionally do things not so nice. And sometimes even on purpose to hurt someone. And Jesus said, hey, let your light shine in your good deeds. And part of the good deeds is how we respond to each other. So as Jesus is teaching, saying, hey, remember, you're a light. You're a beacon of hope in a dark world. And your light needs to shine. It must shine. Remember that the light will shine through how you live, your good deeds. That includes how you treat everyone, every person, no matter what they have done to you, no matter what they have said to you. And so as Jesus was teaching, he all of a sudden kind of turns his corner and he says, you, emphatic you, have heard that it was said. And everyone would have been leaning in because they were like, okay, what have we all heard? And all of a sudden Jesus said a phrase that I'm sure you've heard before. Whether you've ever read the Bible or not, you've heard these words. Jesus said, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. You see, this is an ancient saying going back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before Jesus. It was called, well, in Latin, the Lex Talionis, which is translated into our English, the law of retaliation. Now, Jesus was talking to a Jewish audience that would have been very versed in the Lex Talionis, the law of retaliation. Why? Because it gets anchored into the Mosaic law, the law of Moses that God gave Moses to govern and lead his promised, his chosen people, the Israelites. But you see, the Lex Talionis wasn't just a Jewish thing, a law for the Israelites. You see, researchers, archaeologists have found the Lex Talionis across different groups of people. One of the most famous is the Code of Hammurabi, which is anchored into the mighty nation of Babylon, where they had a very similar law of retaliation. Now, when we hear an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, you know, we kind of feel in our modern day like that's horrible. But actually, it was a very positive law, because the law wasn't about what I get to do to you. The law was all about making sure that when an offense is given, that the retaliation actually matched the offense. Because so many times back then, like if someone did something, especially if someone poor or in a lower level of power and influence did something to someone richer or in a greater seat of power, that person in power would just waylay that person, use all of their power, all their money, all their influence, and just enact the punishment. And well, the law of retaliation said, no, it must be equal. It must match. It was actually a law that helped, would help evil people not to be so evil. And Jesus said, you've heard about this. And then Jesus, he does what he always does. He flips the script. He goes, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. We'll get to the resist word in a moment, but we have to ask the question, what did Jesus mean by evil? Right? Just the word evil. There's a whole list of different images that come to our mind, around Halloween time, right? Is evil a witch on a broomstick? Is evil a ghost? I'm not talking like Casper the Friendly Ghost. I'm talking an evil ghost. Is evil anything with horns, right? Anything with horns, that's evil. Is Dracula evil? Or is, we know, empirically, we know cats are evil. So what did Jesus mean when he said, hey, an evil person? Well, simply what Jesus said was, someone who's bad. That's what that word evil really meant. Just a bad person. And here's the thing. Do you know someone bad? Of course you do. Let me flip the question on you. Have you ever been bad? Have you ever done something spiteful? Have you ever done something revengeful? Have you ever done something on purpose to hurt someone? Have you ever positioned your influence, your power to keep someone to the side or keep someone down? Have you ever done something bad? And the answer for all of us, me included, is yes. And Jesus says, hey, resist. And that word resist was actually a legal term that will play out in his examples that he's going to give. The first example Jesus said was, if someone slaps you on the right cheek. Now, what's built into this was Jesus was just assuming that you were right-handed. So if you're right-handed and you go to slap someone on the right cheek, you would actually have to backhand that person to hit their right cheek. See, Jesus wasn't just getting at someone punching you. A backhanded slap in that day and age, in that culture, it's kind of the same thing as today. It's an insult. I think less of you. You're not that important. It wasn't so much about the physical hit. It was about the insult. Jesus said, hey, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, if someone insults you, and again, maybe you've heard these words before. Jesus said, turn to them the other cheek also. Which everyone had to stop there. I mean, it stops us to this day. When was the last time you actually did that? I mean, it's easy to read those words. It's easy to say, hey, we should treat people that way. But remember, there's something within all of us that wants our revenge. We want to retaliate. But we know where that leads. And Jesus knows where that leads. And that's why he said, don't get your revenge. Don't retaliate. Do something that will shock the other person. Do something that will catch the other person off guard. Do something that's driven by love. And he goes on. He goes, if someone wants to sue you, remember that word resist was a legal term. And so he goes, hey, if someone wants to sue you, you should take your shirt. What should you do? You should freely, not by force, freely hand over your coat. Now this misses, especially some 2,000 years later in a vastly different culture. But to who Jesus was talking to, the coat was the one thing that you had a right to own. no matter your position of power, no matter your influence, and no matter your wealth, you could be the poorest person, but no one could take away your outer coat. You see, your outer coat wasn't just a piece of fabric. I mean, they would use these outer cloaks for to carry supplies, to carry grain. They would use these outer cloaks when it got cold outside to keep them alive. And if you were poor, you would use your outer cloak as a blanket at night. You see, in the Jewish law, you couldn't take someone's outer cloak. And Jesus said, hey, someone sues you for your shirt, give away the one thing that they don't have a right to. The third illustration Jesus says is, if someone forces you to go 1 mile, remember, they were sitting on the hill that went into the Sea of Galilee, but remember the other name. The other name was Lake Tiberias, and Lake Tiberias got its name from the great Roman emperor Tiberius, and they were in this Roman-occupied, Roman-controlled area, and they would have all known this Roman law. So when Jesus said, if someone says, go with me 1 mile, they understood the Roman law, and the Roman law stated this. If a Roman soldier would walk up to you, you would have to carry their stuff for 1 mile. 1,000 Roman soldier paces. Had to. It was Roman law. And they were living in this world where soldiers were everywhere. And if soldiers decided to move from one place to another and they walked up to you, you had to go with them 1 mile carrying all of their stuff. And Jesus said, don't just go 1 mile. Go 2. If someone in a position of power leverages their power over you, don't just do what they're telling you to do, do the extra. And then almost as a bonus, Jesus says, hey, while we're at it, give to the one who asked you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Jesus is like, hey, speaking of going the extra, elevating your response, live a life of generosity. If they ask you, if they want to borrow from you, go the extra. Give the extra. You see, we think about the cycle that so many of us fall trapped to, the revenge, retaliation, regret cycle. I mean, think about the regrets you have right now. Real regrets. I mean, in the moment, your revenge and your retaliation felt so good. But now, months, years, decades later, how does it feel now? And Jesus said, to be a beacon of hope, to let your light shine before others, let them see your good deeds, how you love people by serving people. How you love people by serving people. Do you have a regret right now? Do you have a relationship? And maybe what the person did to you was horrible, but you got your revenge. You retaliated, and you have that regret. Here's what I want to challenge you to do. Close the gap. Close the gap. Go to that person. Apologize for what you've done. And don't expect anything else from them. The only way to allow regret to dissipate is you got to close the gap. And you got to seek forgiveness. Now, they might not want to talk to you. They might not want to extend forgiveness back to you. Remember, it has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with what Jesus has called you to do. And once you have closed the gap on whatever those regrets are, start a new cycle. A new cycle. Not the regret retaliation regret cycle. No. A much better cycle. The cycle that Jesus outlines for us. When revenge comes into us, when that person hurts us, when that person powers down on us, and when that person does an end around, when that person wrongs, revenge is going to start to creep in. What Jesus says is, well, first, we got to reject it. We got to reject our desire to retaliate. And you just got to call it out. You got to call it out within you. You got to recognize that there is a part in your brain that wants the reward of revenge, retaliation. But as soon as you lean into that, what happens? A cycle clicks in. You got to reject it. And the second part, you got to reflect how to treat others. You see, this entire series, Radiate, is about us being a beacon of hope in our dark world. One of the things we've challenged all of you to do is capture people breathing encouragement and life. Whether it's your kids, or maybe it's one of your employees, maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's your life group. Catching moments and sharing the stories on social media. Snapping a pic, writing the story out, and just hashtagging it, Radiate. And I tell you, it's incredible because there's so many stories of people being a beacon of hope across all of our churches. You know, I think about one Sunday where a Facebook message came in to one of our campuses. Doug got the message, and there's someone that hadn't been to church in a very, very long time and had never been to a Tri-County church and was asking, I want to go to church that starts in 45 minutes, and was asking for a ride. And Doug messages Mark, and Mark's like, I'm on it. We'll make sure we get someone to pick him up. And Mark calls Rick, and guess what? Without a blink, Rick said, yeah, I'll go pick him up. That's radiating, illuminating our world. And another one of our campuses, one weekend, someone saw a person walking down the rows of chairs, sliding, well, cards in the back of the seat. So they walked up just to kind of see what was going on, and what they discovered with this person had taken these note cards and had randomly wrote notes of encouragement. And she wanted just to put them in the seat pockets just for that person on some random Sunday, that they would take a note card out and see a note of encouragement. I mean, when I heard that story, my heart erupted. That's what radiating looks like. On a Friday, our church offices were closed, and a phone call came in, and that message was left on the phone machine. It got routed to, well, one of our team members. Her name's Angel, and Angel was having a date day with her husband. They were out, they're going to enjoy a beautiful fall day, and what she realized was there's two elderly ladies, one in her 80s and the other one in her early 90s, and well, one of them just needed help, and somehow, they were told to call Tri-County Church. Quickly, Angel and her husband Mike realized that, well, they could do something. And so what did they do? They drove over, rolled up their sleeves, and just loved these two ladies. You see, the author of Hebrews says we need to spur one another on to love and good deeds. And how we treat each other is everything. You see, Jesus started off this famous teaching found in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7 with a section that maybe you've heard of before. It's called the Beatitudes. And that word beatitude just means blessing. It's a blessing that comes sourced by God, His favor resting within your soul. But when you think about this framework, the framework where we want our revenge to retaliate that leads to regret. And then you think about what Jesus said. No, reject getting revenge, but reflect God's heart. When you think about this, I want you just to hear the words Jesus said. He said, blessed are the poor in spirit. Those of us, which is all of us, that are just spiritually bankrupt. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. When we confess our unworthiness to God, because all of us are bad people, aren't we? Blessed are those who mourn. Mourn. Yes, mourn for loss, but mourn that we're all sinners. We all have treated people bad. We have all done things that we're not proud of. Jesus said, they bless those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That God comforts those that come to Him. Blessed are the meek. And it takes great strength to enact self-control. Great strength. And Jesus said, hey, blessed are the meek. Those who control, they want to enact their revenge, but they're not going to. For the meek will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, who want to live in God's footsteps, who wants to reject their desire to get their revenge, and they want to reflect Jesus' heart. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Those who show other people, even people that don't deserve your mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And blessed are the persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You see, there's a blessing of God's favor that will rest within you. You. But you know what? It's tied to how we love people by serving people to Jesus. It's tied. But how we respond, even when someone has wronged us, even when someone has hurt us. And that's why Jesus said, let your light shine before others, so that they will see your good deeds and glorify God. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you. Lord, I thank you for modeling how to respond. That Jesus, people wronged you. People came after you over and over again. You showed what it looked like to love people by serving people. Lord, may we hold on to this. That living in our dark world, we have an opportunity to be a bright, bright light. In your name I pray. Amen.